Hello, everybody. Welcome to This Pagan Place. This is episode number one of a brand new podcast about witchcraft and paganism, because the world needs another one. I'm sure we do. Today we'll make it short. I'll introduce myself, sort of. Still a little unsure about how much I should put out there as far as information. I'm a witch and a pagan. I've been following this path for 20-some-odd years. I'm in my early to mid-40s. And I've practiced with a number of groups, women-centered groups. I was part of a traditional Wiccan coven for about 5 years, which was a very overwhelmingly positive experience for me. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about what I want to know. I learned a lot about what I don't want to know. I'm very happy I was part of that coven. I'm very happy that I left it. I live in the northeast of the United States, and I love it here. We still have snow on the ground, but it's steadily melting away into spring. Nothing will go into the ground in my garden till June. At least nothing as far as things like tomatoes. I may put in some greens, and I'll probably go out there and manage the herbs and the perennials, but we won't put any vegetables in until late May or early June. The last frost date here is early June, so there's no point. So that's where I'm talking to you from, the northeast of the United States. Very beautiful up here, but very cold. What do we want to talk about? I would like to talk about, right, the magical saying, harm none. A lot of people, consider this part of the fluffy bunny of Wiccanism, and it's not. It's a very difficult thing to live up to, which also puts on the side of why bother. A lot of people say, oh, why bother harming none? You can't help but harm somebody or something as you go through your life. I suppose this is true. The reason we say harm none, and the reason it's a good aphorism to follow, is it forces you to think about your actions, specifically your magical actions. It forces you to think about the your spells and what will happen because of your spells. Who will it affect and how will it affect them? So the commandment, I'll call it commandment, I have another word on the tip of my tongue, but I just can't spit it out, to harm none, it forces us to be very broad in our thinking and to really think through our actions as witches. Now the word harm doesn't mean hurt. Hurt is a different thing, and just because you've hurt something or someone doesn't mean you've harmed them. For instance, let's say you're dating somebody, or you're with somebody, a lover that you've been with for a long time, and who loves you. But you know it's time to end the relationship, and you're reluctant to do it because it will hurt them. But if you stay in it, you will be causing harm to yourself and to your lover, and to probably lots of other people around you. When it's time to leave, it's time to leave. And the wise thing to do is to leave that relationship, even though it's going to hurt your lover. It's not going to harm your lover. Staying will harm them. lot of people say, oh, I don't want to follow the harm none, because what if someone's breaking into my house? I'm not going to harm them. I'm going to call the police, or what have you. And that is absolutely not a harming thing. That you might be going against what the breaker and enterer might intend, but that person is intending harm, and you are protecting yourself, your home. Some people say, oh, what if I do a spell to bind a rapist? That would be harming them. But no, it's not harming them. You probably could even be helping them, or in some places, binding a rapist would, and maybe even working for their arrest, would get that person some help. Who knows? So harm none. The word harm is a bigger word than the word hurt. Even though they're only four letters long, the meaning and the connotations are much longer. The meaning and connotation of harm is much bigger than the meaning of hurt. A hurt is when you cut yourself. That hurts. Harming is a kind of a longer-term thing, I think. A long-term cycle of abuse is harmful to everybody involved. So harming none does not mean not hurting anybody. Harming none doesn't mean not going against somebody else's intentions or ideas. You're not here to fall in line with everybody around you. So I am a firm believer in the harm none. I'm a firm believer also that we are not perfect and we do our best. So I may do my best to live up to the harm none, and I may fail. I may do harm. I may do very horrible harm. I would have to take responsibility for those actions and the fallout. And I would have to learn to forgive myself as well. But I continue to follow the harm none dictum, because it's the right thing to do, especially when you're working with forces as powerful as magical forces. Pagan world, there was some brouhaha over people not being allowed into a women's ritual at Pantheacon. I'm actually a little tired of this topic, but I want to address it because it's we're seeing a change in a basic tenet of paganism and witchcraft, which lays it out for women, that it's a woman's place, that it's a really a woman-centered philosophy, a woman-centered faith, a woman-centered aspect of the world. And that's part of what attracted me when I first came to paganism and witchcraft, was how woman-positive it was. I grew up in a very conservative Baptist Christian home, and I was exposed to a lot of anti-woman sentiment. This is laid out in the Bible, and you know it's there, and it's still in the mainstream of our society, this anti-woman. And paganism offered, and still does offer, an antidote to that. I think that the best of paganism, the best of witchcraft, would make everybody equal, regardless of their gender. Everyone brings different strengths for various reasons. Still, our main society is, it is more male-centered, although it is changing. So at Pantheacon this year, there was a Dianic ritual, a woman-owning ritual, and some male-to-female transgendered people wished to attend and were turned away. And this caused a big brouhaha. A lot of people feel that you are what you are, that you show me the chromosomes. You're not a woman just because you say you are. You're not a man just because you say you are. Drop them. And I'm not saying that that's not my feeling on the matter, but my feeling on the matter of this woman-centered movement and men's place in it is that there is a time and a place for women's magic and a time and a place for men's magic. A place like Pantheacon is not the time or place to separate. Pantheacon, as far as I know, and I've never been, although I do wish to go sometime, is for everybody who wishes to attend. And it's not the sort of place that really should even allow rituals that allow or don't allow a gender. It should be all-inclusive. And that's one way around it, is to be all-inclusive all of the time. But sometimes you do want to be around women. And sometimes you really do want to be around women. So you can talk about your periods, and you can talk about menopause, and you know, younger women have many fears about these things, older women have many frustrations about these things, and men, we don't talk about them with men. They don't have any experience with it, or any direct experience with it. They may have indirect experience with it through their partners, their other family members, and what have you. So I guess there's a lot of vitriol around this Pantheacon incident, and it saddens me in a way. It saddens me for two reasons. It saddens me because there was this divide created between men and women, and a third divide of transgendered folk. And it saddens me because I wonder if all women's circles are on their way out. And I've been a part of some, and I've enjoyed them, and I've been a part of mixed groups, and I've enjoyed those, and I've been a part of very inclusive groups, and I think that everything has its place. Women's only groups have their place. Women who want to be with other women, born women, is a valid thing to desire, but not in a situation like Pantheacon. Pantheacon should either be open or not open. And it is open. It's a broad convention, as far as that's my understanding. So there's a broad convention, and there's no place in a place like that for separating out the genders or having a women's only or a men's only, even a transgendered only ritual. I think if you're going to be accepting of everybody, then be accepting of everybody. And if you come across a group that says, we are for these people and these people only, that needs to be respected. A group that is for women and women only, that needs to be respected. Men only, that needs to be respected. There are a lot of paganism, certain types of paganism, Wicca especially, has a core tenet of gender polarization, male, female. Things correspond with the male, things correspond with the female, or feminine, masculine. And this is a tenet that you either adopt or don't adopt, or it needs to be, but it's a core tenet, and it needs to be respected, and it has certain ramifications. You have male, you have female, so where do transgendered people fall in? You know, my feeling is that our bodies determine our gender, and that's about it. Very little other difference between the genders, or very little intrinsic difference. Most of the differences are put upon us by society. I wear a dress, I must be a woman. I like to build shelves, that must make me a man. And that's all foolishness. I would like to see more men wear dresses and makeup. Would love to see straight men with their beards and their makeup. Would love to see more of that, but it's still rare.
Young rider, apple cheeked one, come with her riding. On her steed so proud and prancing, come with her riding. No matter where I ride, Slavic mountains at my side. To Shemora, to Shemora. Young rider, apple cheeked one, young come rider, apple cheeked one.
Let's shuffle and pull a tarot card. I love the tarot, and I've been reading the tarot cards for over 20 years. I think I got my first deck as a birthday gift when I turned 23. So that's a lot of years. So I've shuffled the deck a little bit, and I'm just going to pull the top card, Knight of Pentacles. I was hoping I would not get a face card or a court card, because I feel like they're harder to read than even the major arcana. Generally speaking, the court cards are aspects of your own personality, or the querent's personality, whoever you're reading for, if you're reading for somebody else. Or it could be an aspect of another person around the question. I didn't really ask a question, we're just pulling it for fun. The Knight of Pentacles in the Rider-Waite is a knight sitting on a black horse with orange or red-orange dressings, and he's holding a pentacle looking over the landscape. And the main thing about this one is that there's no movement. The knights tend to be about movement. Most of them are charging. The Knight of Swords is charging off with his sword raised. But this guy is, he's steady. He's standing still, and he's looking over the landscape and the world at large, whatever he's got there. So when you pull the Knight of Pentacles, or when you pull any card, the first thing you should do is look at it. Look at it very carefully and see what's in there, and just think about the image quietly, and then go on to the symbolism. For instance, pentacles are symbolic of the earth, of material things, of practical and pragmatic matters. And the earth, generally speaking, doesn't really move. It's a steady element. You go out into your yard one day, there's the dirt, the earth. You go out the yard the next day, it's pretty much the same. It's still there. So the Knight of Pentacles is a steady guy, or a steady person, a steady aspect of your personality. He thinks about things very carefully before proceeding. And depending on your question, or depending on the reason why you pulled it, it could indicate that you need to do just that, to slow down, or even just stop, and rethink, reorganize, look over carefully. I would even say not to think, but just to observe. This is what in the image is what he's doing. He's observing the pentacle, and he's observing the landscape very carefully, just to see what he sees. This is a good advice card if you've lost something. That's what my mother used to do. I would complain and say, oh, I lost this or that. She would stand in my room and find it. amongst the mess that it was. And you just stand there quietly without looking for it and just look. And that's what the Knight of Pentacles is doing. He is just observing. And then he'll make his decision and go on to further actions. So I pulled him upright. I don't actually read reversed. A lot of readers will put between a third and a half of their cards deliberately upside down and shuffle so that you have a mix of upright and reversed when you lay out your cards. But I don't do that. I keep all my cards upright, mainly because when I'm reading, I find it hard to see the card when it's reversed. So I leave them upright. But every now and again, a reverse card does happen, and then I take it very seriously, and I look at it very closely. Generally speaking, I feel like the cards up in their upright position have so many meanings by themselves, and then other meanings according to what position they're in and what cards are surrounding it, that there's no need really to throw in the reversed nuances of the card. Generally speaking, though, when you do get a reverse card, it just means that the energy is blocked. So, for instance, and not necessarily the opposite. So, for instance, the Knight of Pentacles basically means or shows stillness, sturdiness. Upside down, you could take it to mean exactly the opposite. But I don't think that's a good way to really read it, to say, oh, upright, it's still, which means down or reversed, that's movement. But I don't think that's really what it shows. Just could show a skewed way of looking at things. The energy of the card is blocked. So the energy of the card would be a careful observation. Reversed, it could mean that there are things that you can't or won't see. Maybe you need to look at things. It could mean that need to move further. It's time to stop being still and take some action. But we won't go too far into the reversals because I don't really read them very much. So that's the Knight of Pentacles. Knights often also can mean messages. So a Knight of Pentacles, if you're going to read it as a message, it would be a message about money or some other pragmatic matter that you might be involved in. And that's the Knight of Pentacles. And next time we'll take a look at another card. I just drew it randomly, so.
Tonight. Star.